This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Our world is a much different place since vaccines became a common part of medical care. Once common diseases like polio and smallpox have been eradicated or eliminated. But there remains a lot of public skepticism over the safety of vaccines, which has led to outbreaks of preventable diseases like measles. According to the Center for Disease Control, or the CDC, there are currently 30 U.S. states experiencing measles outbreaks, including Illinois, Michigan, and Iowa. Dr. Joy Sanchez is a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin who specializes in infectious diseases, and she's here in studio now. Dr. Sanchez, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
This is a really basic question. How do vaccines work?
That's a great question, and it's something that can be easily explainable even to my six-year-old son. What vaccines do is they prime the human body to recognize germs if it comes into contact with them later on. So, for example, I like the analogy of the militia. So our bodies have white blood cells or immune cells that essentially develop an antibody or a flag when it comes into contact with a germ so that later on down the line, the body can remember what it came into contact with and flag the germ more readily, more easily, so that the person doesn't come down with illness. What vaccines do is they take advantage of the immune system. So some example of a vaccine is the flu vaccine. So that's a dead flu virus or a piece of a flu virus that we inject to a person. Their white blood cells make this flag or antibody so that if they come into contact with the flu later on in the fall or the winter, they don't actually come down with the illness because their white cells can kill the flu virus very readily.
So I think some people hear that and they're like, okay, well, you're putting a flu virus inside of me. Could that make me sick? Why are we able to put these kinds of viruses into something like a vaccine and not become ill?
That's a very common question I get in my clinic from patients, parents, and people alike who are getting the vaccine themselves. Some vaccines do cause some adverse effects. Usually they're very, very minor, things like a low-grade fever or some muscle soreness in the arm where the injection occurred. But what these vaccines do is they actually take either a weakened version of the virus, so those are live viral vaccines, where they're mutated so that your body can recognize them, but they don't actually cause illness. Another form is a killed virus, where we take the virus and kill it. So you're basically seeing pieces of the virus, but the virus is not actively multiplying or causing illness. Other forms of vaccines, like a toxin-derived vaccine, like the tetanus vaccine, which most people get every 10 years, that takes a toxin that the bacteria produces, but the toxin itself is not harmful.
You know, there are a lot of misconceptions when it comes to vaccines. I think a lot of people have heard, you know, the autism misconception, which has been widely debunked. What are some of the things that people come in and say or ask about that you have to kind of work against?
My general approach to someone who is vaccine hesitant or someone who may be on the fence is I listen to them very carefully to hear what their concerns are. And I think one of the number one concerns, particularly for parents who are bringing their children in for vaccines, is the concern about safety with the vaccine. You can see your child, a six-month-old. I remember my son when he was 6 months old getting five shots in two legs and thinking, wow, could that be traumatizing to my son or to later my daughter? And the quick answer to that is one shot or even just a visit to a pediatrician causes stress to a baby, and five vaccines doesn't cause any additional stress to baby. There have been actually really well-looked-at studies looking at levels of cortisol, which is a stress hormone released by kids, and shows that just a regular visit is, or one vaccine is no different than five. I think the biggest concern, though, is that vaccines, it's been said, are a victim of their own success. So we no longer have that memory of what things were like before vaccines were around. For example, in the 1950s, polio vaccine, responsible for 500,000 paralyzed people and deaths every year in the United States. We don't see polio anymore because the vaccine is so efficacious. Similar with measles. Measles was eradicated in 2000, no active transmission, but as more and more communities have decided not to vaccinate their children because they're not seeing measles, don't think it's a concern, and are concerned about side effects, have chosen not to vaccinate. So I listen, and then I try to address some of the concerns depending on what they bring to the table.
Well, and there's a feeling among some that, you know, things like the measles or chickenpox, something that we didn't vaccinate against when I was little, you know, that these aren't really serious diseases. What do you say to people who, you know, think that, well, it's not going to hurt my kid if they have the measles?
That's a very common question and point that parents bring up too. For the vast majority of people who get measles, it can be a mild illness. But I'll tell you right now, Joy, that 1 in 1,000 children and adults who contract measles actually develop very serious complications. What are those? Serious pneumonia that can require hospitalization, or something called encephalitis or swelling of the brain that can cause someone to be demented and not think properly. And when we weigh the risks of those issues, so 1 in 1,000, with the risk of serious adverse effects from the vaccine, it's less than 1 in 1,000,000 that actually get a serious adverse effect. So when I talk to patients about the risks, I weigh those two odds of probability.
You know, you talked about earlier the kind of trauma that might be associated with getting one vaccine versus getting five vaccines. And there are some parents who decide to have a kind of elongated schedule that's really against what's suggested by doctors. Is there any danger in doing that?
When we study vaccines, we study them on a specific schedule to know how efficacious they are, how effective they are in real life, in the real world population every day. And so when we report out vaccine efficacy, it's based on those schedules. The risk of delaying vaccines later on down the line is you're taking a child who is at the most vulnerable state. They're infants and young children who do not have matured immune systems, and they're young, and if they get sick, they don't have the stamina to really withstand serious illness and can die from vaccine-preventable illnesses. So my argument against expanding or elongating the amount of time between vaccines is you're unnecessarily exposing your child to highly vaccine-preventable illnesses for no reason and potentially putting on a schedule where we don't really know the efficacy.
Yeah. What are some of the vaccines that have been developed over, say, the last 20 years? I think some people are familiar with the HPV vaccine, which has been, you know, highly promoted.
I love that you bring up the HPV vaccine. Some people describe this as the holy grail of vaccines because it's the only one known to protect against cancer. Cancer. So HPV vaccine came out in the late 1990s, early 2000s. I remember because I was a teenager at the time and was very eager to get protected myself. The HPV or human papillomavirus vaccine is the only one known to protect against cervical cancer in women. Interestingly enough, this virus has also been associated with head and neck cancers in men and women. And as someone who treats patients for infectious diseases, if they get a head and neck cancer and it gets infected, it can be very disfiguring and very distressing. And so I see the consequences of infection with this virus over the long term. So this is a wonderful, relatively new, it's not new anymore, but relatively new vaccine that I highly encourage young adults and even adults up to the age of 45 to get. We used to administer it to people 26 years of age and younger, and a lot of people thought that they missed the boat. But the FDA just this past year approved its use for people 45 years and younger. So we're starting to protect people who are older than their mid-20s now, which is exciting.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, of course, that for a bit, older adults weren't able to get the vaccine. And at least from my little bit of research that I've done, there were some vaccines that I didn't really know were an option, I guess. What are some of these lesser-known vaccines that are available to adults?
Sure. A lot of people have heard of the shingles. And shingles is essentially a resurgence of the chickenpox virus that people may have been infected with when they were younger, infants, young adults. The shingles vaccine, there was an older formulation of it that has been available for a long time. However, just last spring of 2018, a brand new version of the shingles vaccine was released and approved for use by the FDA, and it has much higher efficacy now. It's upwards of 95% or more in preventing the dreaded shingles, pretty painful rash that can occur the older that we get after having been exposed to chickenpox. It's two doses, so I encourage people to talk to their primary care providers or check with their pharmacies, because this highly anticipated vaccine was in such demand that there was actually a national shortage. Thankfully, the vaccine manufacturer has come up to speed with the demand, and so we're starting to administer it more, but there's still wait lists at several pharmacies for patients. It's been approved for use for those 60 and above. However, it's also approved for use for those 15 and above, so I encourage people to check with their insurance if they're between 50 and 60 years old to make sure it's covered so that they're not stuck with an out-of-pocket cost.
Yeah. And if you've had chickenpox before, I had thought that, you know, if you had chickenpox when you were a kid, that now you're fine. You're not going to get shingles as an adult. I learned from a friend of mine who got shingles that that is not the case.
You're absolutely right about that, Joy. So only individuals who have been infected or had previous exposure to chickenpox are at risk of developing shingles later in life. The type of virus that is responsible for chickenpox and shingles is a virus that lives dormant in the nervous system of our bodies for the rest of our lives. And under times of stress or as we get older or if we have health problems or are on medications to bring down the militia or the immune system we have in our bodies, that's when the virus really takes advantage and comes out again in the form of shingles.
Speaking of things that you get as an adult, you know, there are a number of different vaccines that don't protect you for your entire life. What are the things that you need to re-vaccinate for as an adult?
Many vaccines do offer lifelong immunity, or essentially the equivalent to lifelong immunity, all things considered. For example, after two doses of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine or MMR vaccine, the chance of having lifelong immunity is upwards of 97%+. So some of those you don't need. Others, for example, the killed versions of the vaccines are less effective and require boosters, as you alluded to. The tetanus vaccine is a classic example. Tetanus vaccine, there are two formulations. The one that I generally give has three components to it: tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis. Those are all vaccine-preventable illnesses. And we know that even after 3 years after the vaccine, that the pertussis component or protection wanes over time. This is especially important for women who are pregnant, because pertussis is a very deadly illness for infants and young children. So a few years ago, the recommendation was to vaccinate pregnant women, even if it's been less than 10 years since their last tetanus combined vaccine.
What is pertussis?
Pertussis is a respiratory illness. It causes significant pneumonia and respiratory distress, breathing problems in infants and young children, and has actually previously been responsible for many deaths nationwide every year before the advent of the vaccine.
Aside from that vaccination, are there any others that you really do need to get a booster that you may not know about?
Absolutely. So we live in a world that has more and more travel going on. We're more and more connected globally. So especially for those who plan to travel internationally, I highly recommend that they talk to their primary care physician or actually seek guidance from a travel clinic. There are certain vaccines that do need boosters. For example, there's an illness called typhoid fever that tends to be prominent in developing countries of Africa, Southeast Asia, Latin America, for example. The longest duration is the oral vaccine that lasts only 5 years. We talked about tetanus vaccine every 10 years. for some individuals, particularly those who smoke cigarettes or those who have conditions that makes their immune system suppressed or not as robust, we often recommend pneumonia vaccine boosters. For those who turn age 65, that's a general recommendation to give to everybody, regardless of what other medical conditions they may have. So those are some examples.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you think people really need to know about vaccines?
I think there's a lot of misinformation out there. Social media, the internet that is readily accessible. That's one of the wonderful things about the age we live in. But it's also a downfall of the age we live in is there's a lot of misinformation. So for those who are hesitant or worried about safety of vaccinations, I highly recommend that they talk to their providers about their concerns so that they can get the real data, the valid data, and not some of this misinformation.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Sanchez, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you for having me, Joy.
Dr. Joy Sanchez is a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin who specializes in infectious diseases. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.